Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord informed the Brahmanas, wives, that not only they, but all people who recognize their true self-interest take the spiritual process of loving service to the Lord, Lord Krishna, is Atma-Priya. Oh, sorry. Let's do that again. The Supreme Lord informed the Brahmanas' wives that not only they, but all people who recognize their true self-interest take to the spiritual process of loving service to the Lord. Lord Krishna is Atma-Priya, the real object of love for everyone. Although each individual has his own taste and freedom, ultimately every living being is a spiritual spark of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, everyone's primary loving attraction is constitutionally meant for Krishna. Loving service to the Lord should be ahaitiki, without personal motive, and avyavahita, unobstructed by mental speculation, selfish desire, or any quirk of time and circumstance. Certainly expert personalities who can see their own true interest render unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service directly unto me, for I am the most dear to the soul. The topic for today, of which this verse is part of the chapter, is the Brahmin's wife blessed. The Dvijapatnis, the wives of the twice born, who will be criticized as being Dvija in the sense of being born of two parents rather than Dvija being second born. As you know, within the whole Brahminical lifestyle of ceremony, ritual, and meaning, the Brahmin is named Dvija, meaning he's born of parents, but he's born again through ritual, and again to perform ritual. A young boy born of Brahmin parents will perform a ceremony, Upanayanam, at a young age, you don't know exactly, but it's probably between 5 and 10, somewhere, whereabouts. The young have seen several such ceremonies. It's a very big thing. In the Vrindavan Gurukul, there was quite a few boys from Nepal, from Brahmin families. And as they studied away from home, the parents would get into tremendous anxiety because they had to return home at a second time, a specific time, in order to perform their Upanayan Sanskar, which meant that now they are the eligible, they are recognized. Through ceremony, they have become a Brahmin. Now, of course, also with Brahmins, still, they have no right to perform sacrifice. And you know, the foremost duty of the Brahmin is to perform sacrifice. He would gather the most powerful, greatest of people in the nation or in the village and make great promise to them that if they would throw things in the fire before them, then the Brahmin would control the Devatas, who were the people controlling everything. So they were the mediators on behalf of divinity or the devas or whatever. They stood between the people and what was beyond the people's perception. But people trusted them that by giving offerings and by paying them healthy sums, giving them, nowadays sometimes people say, oh, you pay a devotee minimum wage. Well, the Brahmins would take acres and acres of land in payment for whatever they did, not £5 something per hour. So, but still they had no right to perform sacrifice. The right to perform sacrifice was born when they married. no unmarried man could perform any sacrifice. The eligibility was through marriage. And that's why, obviously, when Brahma got himself into tremendous trouble, because he wanted to perform a sacrifice and his wife wasn't present. So he made the great mistake to almost whimsically take a second wife. And from then, it became extremely problematic for him. But unless the wife, unless the priest was married, he couldn't perform sacrifice. The right to sacrifice came through the Vivaha Sanskar. Here in this chapter of the Bhagavat, in this Leela of Krishna, is a tremendous, the focus now is on this Brahminical type. You see, this Brahminical type is here spoken articulately about by Vyasadeva in the narration of this Leela, in contrast to Keval Bhakti, the devotee. And in this case, and much of the case in the Bhagavatam, especially in Krishna Leela, who emanates that devotion very profoundly is the woman. It's a kind of feminine thing, devotion. Men have to embrace their feminine side, so to speak. So this devotion is typified by the simple woman who's had no endless ceremonies except for her rites of passage is marriage. She'd perform, be part of the Vivaha ceremony and officially became the wife of the Brahmin, and then her duties and all these things were prescribed. And specifically in relation to her Brahmana husband. So her progress materially, after all, that's what Vedic Brahmanism exists for, or was initially about. Hedonism. It was sophisticated, it was ways of progressing one's material life. So, in this sense, the wife, Brahman's wife, served the husband. She became eligible for sacrifice as well through marriage. She became eligible for dharma and the dharma phal and what would come of dharma, and which in the case of Vedic Brahmins, was specifically about getting more cows, getting more land, and living the proverbial 100 years. There's practically not a Vedic blessing that goes by without the priest saying, may you live 100 years, 100 autumns, may you live long. Because Vedic Brahmanism wasn't about moksha. Vedic Brahmanism wasn't about loving Krishna and attaining ultimately devotional prema bhakti. Vedic Brahmanism was about live long, may death stay far from us, and may we enjoy the fruits of life with sons, cattle, lands, power, and wealth. This type of Brahmanism, or a life of rituals and knowledge toward this specific end, is what is epitomized in the character of the Brahmins in this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. And they are somewhat ridiculed simply by the character of the woman who has little rights, of the woman who's supposed to literally serve, is her only eligibility in life, that Brahmin husband, and from the woman who is simple in this sense, as it's depicted. There's a contrast here already. These things are being juxtaposed. The male Brahmin intellect with all eligibilities and qualifications in life, and the weak female, etc., etc., etc. But in juxtaposing these two specific caricatures, obviously Krishna, acting to please his devotees, the Dvijapatnis, the wives, puts them on the most highest platform, as opposed to the highly qualified male domineering person. That's clear from this chapter. This Brahmanical type is also very prominent in the Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's historical. The biggest problem for Chaitanya Dev in his movement of bhakti in Navadvip was not necessarily people of other faith traditions. It was necessarily the Brahmins of Navadvip, who had literally, and in opposition to their rulers and invaders of India, developed such a sophisticated eligibility system within the Hindu society that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Yavana Dosh, they considered if somebody of Brahminical caste spent time in close proximity to someone of a lower caste, someone of another faith, then they would lose their eligibility as a Brahmin. And in that way, they tried stringently to control people and keep them away from others and retain their identity. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced the Sudra, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would have carried the body of the Musalman Haridas Thakur, the biggest opposition to his movement was the orthodoxy. Who are the orthodoxy on no other basis than their own claims? So here, this is Chaitanya Leela. Here, this type now is being juxtaposed with what obviously is in the ultimate interest, as in this verse 26 here, we can see, Nandvada mai kurvanti kushala swartha darshina. The yagyik Brahmins are entirely about swartha, what they stand to gain. Swartha. This is also in the Gita. Yaimam pushpatam vacham pravadanti pravadanti avipashita veda vadaratha partha nanyadastati vadina kamatmana swargapala janma karma pala pradam kriya vishesha bahulam bugaishaya gatim prati. In contrast, again you see here in contrast, Krishna had just spoken that verse, Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. Someone in Keval Bhakti, which means exclusive devotion, is fully focused. Again, in the Gita, what's that verse? That rag, krodha, vitaraga bhaya krodha, manmaya mamu pashrita. Krishna describes the character of the devotee, mamu pashrita. They are fully taking full refuge of Krishna. No, wait a minute now, things haven't been so good for me for a while. Perhaps I should consider shifting my loyalties. I think in life we face moments like that. Sometimes as devotees we face moments like that. where perhaps we all, purification is a big word with us, isn't it? Purification, purification. Why is it a big word for us? Because we're floating back to Godhead, or we're lying on a bed of rose petals? No, because each of those roses, there's a thorny stem. And picking roses, you know, you should wear your gloves. Because there's every likelihood, isn't it? The path. The path is the great noble path. But still, there are so many thorny thickets that we must traverse. We'll refer to them as purification. You can't move forward unless you let go of the baggage. And in a very ideal sense, in a very grand sense, people use the epithet that die to live. Not only tolerate the thorns, one must be prepared to die materially, in every sense, to live spiritually. So the process of dying means letting go of everything. There's nothing left. Recently, or some time back, my father passed away. And he just, in a moment, left. And we, the family, were left with all the things you've probably experienced in your own life. What should we do with Dad's clothes? His books, his Bible, his rings, his belongings, his lawnmower, the person's gone and all the things. We have all the things. They remain. And then till finally, one day, a little box is delivered of ash. Even the body, every part of it, every particle of it, will be there on the mantle. What should we do with it? So, leaving everything. So, the purification, that's the point I was talking about, wasn't it? We use this word purification. And why was I talking about purification? Yes. Yes. So, Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha. Taking complete refuge. Taking complete refuge of Sri Krishna without turning in any other direction. My loyalty remains. Like a very close friend. Sometimes a very close friend may go down in life, in very embarrassing circumstances, or whatever, where some compromise has been made. We may want to no longer be identified with them. But they say, isn't it, that you know your true friends in such a time. You know your true friends when you're down. So, the loyalty remains. Bitraga Bhaya Krodha literally is making the point that the rag, the attachments which draws in a certain material direction, and the bhaya, the fear of things which pushes us away from another direction. See, here we're just literally moving from one side to the other materially, by the pushing and pulling of raga. Raga dvesha binivesh. These are also anarthas. The pushing, the love for stuff and the hatred of stuff. The attachment to things, the fear of things. These are when we are just the disciples of our psychology, then that literally, these are the things that determine the direction of our lives. So the vyavasayatmika buddhi literally meaning that being resolute, my loyalties remain fixed, and I won't follow the pushings and pullings, the rag, dvesh, the baya, krodha. Krodha also a great transformer of the human soul, meaning literally emotions, etc. In a state of, you know, we may be resolute in our devotional service on the altar, until another pujari suggests, maybe you should put the garland this way. And you go, 15 years I've been doing it this way. Baba, you're here 1 week. And they say, no, maybe, you know, I saw in Mayapur, you know, they do it so nicely there. So what, Maya, we don't do it nicely here? What's so good about Mayapur? This is Bhaktivedanta Manor. And then, you know, Prabhuji, maybe you shouldn't talk so much in the altar. What? It's my service. Whatever, etc., etc. And when these things take over, this emotion rises within the system. We can do things which are so out of character, so out of character, that in retrospect we think we'll hang our head in shame. And if we have some humility, we'll make all apologies and accept, you know, the crowd. The anger came over me, you know, I wasn't quite myself. Forgive me for that. And I'll help pay for your prescription. Perhaps if it gets to that extent. And it can, isn't it, in anger. Once in the train in India, I was traveling with, you know, we travel with about 30 students, general compartment on a train in India. And boys, my God, you know, you can be, what do you say, on what is it they say, a short fuse. Isn't it, if you're highly strung, it's not good to be highly strung. If you're very intense, you can be on a short fuse, which is not good. So on an occasion, there was a very big gentleman who was bullying the boys on the train and ridiculing everybody. And I just became so angry. And I stood up and I grabbed him by the arm, and he didn't move even a centimeter. He was so strong, and I just kind of stood there. And then sat back down again. So in anger I rose, I became so big. I became big beyond my own true material being. I became so big through my anger, prepared to fight with and challenge such a powerful person. And when it came to the crunch, I was humiliated because it was inconsistent with inconsistent with my capabilities and my chosen lifestyle. So it was important. So these are the things. Keval Bhakti means to continue on, loyal to the path and loyal to the object of devotion, the relationship, whether it's a friendship, the lover, the servant, whatever, completely loyal in that sense. So here, this is seen within the Brahmanis, that the kurv, nothing else, nanvada mai kurvanti kushala swartha darshina. This point was, if you really have self-interest, you Brahmanas are performing all these things in what you believe to be your self-interest. And you are the vadina, and it's mentioned in here, Brahma vadina. You live by the letter of the Veda, the pushpitam vacham of the Veda. On one side, we say all authority is drawn from the Veda. On the other side, Sri Krishna himself is ridiculing people who follow the letter of the Veda. Yaimam pushpitam bacham pravadanti vapashita. They've lost the plot. That's what that means, Vipassana. They've lost the plot. Has anybody ever said that to you? Prabhu, you have lost the plot. I have a kind of a recollections coming to mind of when I was a bhakta at the manor here, and I was asked to go to a university program in Wales with Ranchwar Prabhu, and I was to take the prasad from here, collect him, and go to Wales to the program. But of course, there is nothing that creates more anxiety if you're the responsible person or the host when the cook's late. I know the cook has their stress, but when just protecting myself from all sides here, but when the cook's late, so that it's pandemonium. So I was waiting, and you know, Rancho Prabhu, he's very sober, very a lot of gravity, a lot of stature, and I was starting to get bewildered by the situation, and the cook was not going to be ready, we're going to be very late, and I decided, let me just go to Seoul, pick him up, come back and get the prasad and go, without any thought for the distance involved. And so I left, and when I got there, he said, where's the prasad? And I said, it wasn't ready, it's at the manor. And he looked at his watch and he said, well, sometimes they say better late than never, but in this case, better we don't go. Have you lost the plot? This is losing the plot. Personal experience of that. Losing the plot. So, for Svartha, this Yaimam Pushputam Vacham Pravidanti Vapashita means they abide by the letter of the Veda, but they have lost the plot. Bogaishaya prasaktanam taya aparita chetasam. Aparita chetasam is someone who's lost the plot. They've become mindless. They've become mindless. I think it was Jesus, was it, that said to the Jewish prophets who were living by the letter of the Torah, that you're so concerned for washing your arms to the elbow, you've forgotten the entire purpose of that lies behind all of these matters. And that's what should be known. Also, that verse is there in the Gita. Of all the wells, what's that verse? Someone know that verse? Give me the first word of that verse. I'll remember it in a minute. So many wells are there. Of water, reservoir of water. There's so many bodies of water are there, isn't it? But a great well fulfills all purposes. You know, you can take bath, wash your clothes, and your pots all in a great river. You know, but you can't do that in a smaller body of water. They say you're contaminating the water. Don't contaminate the water, isn't it? So, like an Achman cup, you can't wash your dishes with an Achman cup, but you can purify yourself and your consciousness. It's a powerful small body, but you can't wash your pots with it. Maybe if it was the only water available, but so in the same way, Krishna says, for one who knows what is the purpose behind the Veda. For one who knows, every ritual, every sacrifice, all the business is understood. When we know what it's all toward, when we know what it's all toward, our life, our loyalties will all fall in place. So again, the Brahmanas here, they are Nishida. Their whole concern, perhaps I should be telling you the story, but I think everybody's very familiar with the Leela of the Brahmanas' wives. I would hope so. Their concern for the Niyams, Niyamita. When the boys approached the Brahmins, they were hungry. Krishna told them, "You go and speak to the Brahmins. See what they'll give." They were so, they were thinking, no one can eat before the Brahmins. Krishna, Balaram, everybody knows in Vedic ceremony, you do the ceremony, and then first we eat. Again, the Brahmanas, we eat. Then the next guest eat, then the next guest eat, and it goes the whole way right down to the dog. So there's an order here. Maybe God, Parabrahman, whatever, Krishna, Balaram, whatever. There's an order to the ritual. Even the boys were saying, but even still, between the beginning of the ceremony and, in this case, the killing of the animal, which is the pashu that's mentioned here, the animal that was being sacrificed by these Brahmins, then only during that time, but after that time you can feed. And what determines who should be fed? And the boys also said, what determines who should be fed? Someone who's hungry. What's the use in feeding in a particular order where you leave a starving person without food? Whilst it's not part of the... Everything is reduced to the ritual. This is Dravya Yagya. Krishna speaks of that again in the Gita. Dravya Yagya. Shriyan Dravya Mayad Yagyaj. Jnana Yagya Purantapa. What's he... When Krishna says Jnana Yagya Purantapa, he's saying... Use your buddhi. Dravya Yagya literally means that when life has simply been reduced to the rituals, and we do it because we do it. We do this ceremony, we do this puja, we do these things, it's our ways, it's our culture, it's our ancestors. We do it because we do it. Dravya Yagya. And Dravya Yagya also refers again to this hedonistic religious tradition of the Vedas. That dharma should result in kama and artha, pleasure and gain in this world. So, what point was I making? The Brahmins were Niyamata, yes. They were particular to every detail that the very Lord of all sacrifice, Yagyo Vai Vishnu, Bhoktaram Jagat, the real sannyas, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, the one who stands beyond, behind, as the ultimate objective of everything, you're denying him. Somebody, I remember a very funny example someone gave me, where once Palladananda Maharaj was in Vrindavan. And he was in one room, and his disciples were in the other room. He had no food. They were in the other room offering food to the picture. It's a good example, isn't it, of how people lose the plot when it comes to what we do. And all the things, isn't it? All the ultimate outcome of it all is love, isn't it? Prema. Unconditional love is stated here. Ahoy tiki, avyavahitam, a love which is unmotivated, a love which is continuous, like the Dvijapatnis. When Krishna sent the boys back to the Dvijapatnis, the boys just said the name Krishna and Balaram, and they fainted in a swoon. And it's hard to imagine that on the hearing of the name. I mean, the greatest love story in Western society is Romeo and Juliet, really, isn't it? I don't know if she actually fainted in hearing the name Romeo. But in this case, when they heard the name Krishna and Balaram, they began to fall in a faint. Now, they had never met with Krishna before. They had only heard of Krishna. And this type of attachment is called purvarag. Purvarag means attachment which has formed when one hasn't literally had an introduction as yet. Purvarag is something in a material sense that every parent wants to make sure their child doesn't experience before marriage, because it determines a person's direction. It's the big worry of the parent. If the child falls in love with somebody who is questionable, their love will blind them. They'll be blinded by the love, and it may not be the best decision, but it will be the determining factor. So, in the transcendental sense of, the original sense of purvarag, they only had heard about Krishna from flower people who take care of the flowers in the forests, and from some of the ladies of Braja, because they lived in a place, Lohavan, which is just where Akrura, Akrura, when he's taking Krishna and Balaram, isn't it? There's a place where from that point onward, all the relationships become somewhat dilute as the grandeur of God takes prominence beyond toward Mathura. Sometimes they're referred to as the Mathura Brahmanis, the wives of the Brahmins of Mathura. From there on, isn't it, we see that though Vasudev and Devaki, Krishna and Balaram wanted to be embraced by Vasudev and Devaki, but as they ran to embrace their children, what happened? They became prayerful. Krishna just wants to be embraced. And because of the nature of their devotion and the nature of their dham, then they began to form a pranam, isn't it? A lover will only perform pranam when they're in big trouble as a means of... This is another type of viraha man. I'll mention something about that quickly. So the purvarag, just from hearing, it said by hearing and by seeing is the cause of the purvarag. Feeling of already a feeling of separation, viraha, from the object of devotion. It's already a feeling of separation from the object of devotion, though there has been no contact with the object of devotion. I think obviously this is the realm where, you know, we all, the sadhakas, we are cultivating our love of Krishna in a separation from him, which has been cultured, not based upon some bhog or a meeting with him, but there has been no meeting. But we have heard, and we continue to hear. So by hearing and by seeing, it said that by seeing perhaps the very form of Krishna, or by seeing a picture of Krishna, or a painting of Krishna, through these ways, just by the seeing, purvarag may be cultured. And by the hearing, nam, rup, guna, lila, all these things, then the poor virag is also cultured. So through hearing and through seeing. And this is a form of vipralamba or viraha bhakti. And Prabhupada said, this is how we should cultivate our spiritual lives. When he was, I think it was in South India, he was with a family, and Sarasvati, the little girl, daughter of Shamasundar, was there, and some life member had given her a very expensive deity of Krishna. And Prabhupada was a little concerned for that. It was a very expensive, valuable deity given to a little girl. So, and she was all about this Krishna deity. So Prabhupada took it. And when she came, Prabhupada was with all the people, and she was wandering around saying, where's Krishna? Where's Krishna? Where's my Krishna? Where's Krishna? And she was going to the various people. This is in Lilamrita, this story. Where is Krishna? And she was going around the people. And then finally, somebody said, Prabhupada is Krishna. And so she came to Prabhupada for Krishna. And Prabhupada said, this is the mood of the Goswamis. And devotion should be practiced and cultivated in this mood, viraha. This is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lived his life. He lived his life to such a degree. Ha Krishna Prananath, Brajendra Nandana, Kahan Jan, Kahan Gan, Murali Vandana. He lived in 12 years in such feelings of viraha that he had to be managed by other people. He was unmanageable. He was in such a pathetic human state. His body was falling apart. His mind was, he was unconscious, semi-conscious, conscious, unmada, mad. He was mad with it. And for 12 years, he just rubbed his face on a wall. Ha ha, Krishna Prananath, Lord of my life. Brajendra Nandana, son of Nanda Maharaj. Kahan Jan, where will I go? Kahan God, what will I do? Murali Vandana, to be with this player of the flute. This mood was cultured by the followers of Chaitanya. Sad Goswami Astakam. He Radhe Brajadeviki Chalalite He Nanda Sunokota. They ran everywhere, it said, isn't it? In the Brajapuri Sarvata, they ran Goshantav Iti Sarvata Brajapure. They ran in every direction, calling out, He Radhe Brajadeviki Nanda Suno. Where are you all, Kuta? Where is everyone? Are you at the foot of Govardhan? Are you beneath the Kalpa Brikshas? Are you wandering on the forests on the bank of Yamuna? This was the aesthetic of their devotion. The Purvarag felt by the Dvijapatnis was what gave them a meeting with Krishna. It had been cultured in them. They had reached a certain height of devotion, which gave them the eligibility to come before Krishna, which they did. In this, anyway, there's a whole Purvarag is one form of biraha. There's also man. There's also prem by chitya. There's also, what's it called? Pranas, I think it's called. So that Purvarag before meeting. Man means when in meeting one feels separation, come from anticipation of separation. That's exemplified in Prem Sarovar, where Krishna went to chase the bee away and returned to Radha and said, Madhu's gone as the bee. And though she was there on the lap of Krishna, she began to weep and weep and weep, feeling separated. Prem Vaichitya. Man, so that's Prem Vaichitya. Man means you're together, but there's something blocking. There's still separation because someone's in a mood, something's happened with reason or without reason, where the two lovers are unable to be fully united. And finally, the final form is just when there has been meeting, but for some other reasons, there's separation, we're parted, we're apart from each other. So the Brahmanis, the Dvijapatnis, were experiencing viraha bhakti in the form of purvarag, exclusive devotion performed with a tremendous anticipation of meeting Krishna and a tremendous sense of separation from the object of love. And that's what delivered to them the company of Krishna. What's in all of this for us? Why? I don't think that needs to be, that is there within the Leela. What is in all of this for us? Will we become in due course institutionalized people where we lose track of our spirituality and become religious people with particular interest in the fruit of the language, the letters of the law, in our cleanliness, our ritualistic cleanliness, our own self narcissistic glorification, whatever, which is so in these days and even today is epitomized by this type of religious person who in this case Krishna accepted the offerings of the wives, the worship of the wives, and the husbands were benefited. There's something tossed on its head, because normally the Veda Ratha is completely the other way. In entirety. And so their simplicity, their love, and their offering delivered their husbands. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Is there any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhuji.